If you become accustomed to frequently, for want of a better word, want of a better phrase, resting in your being, if you visit your being regularly, you build up a kind of reservoir of peace in yourself. You build up some credit. And then when you find yourself in a highly stressed circumstance, you may not have a moment in that circumstance to go back to your being. It's just a 1 hour full-on intensity. You have to give your attention exclusively to the situation, and it's difficult, it's conflictual, it's intense. You don't have time to pause and take even 2 minutes out. That's when you draw on your credit. You draw on your reservoir. You find it's just, you just feel it's there in the background. It's like you begin as this reservoir of peace builds up in you. You just feel it like a kind of ocean of peace behind you. And just to give you a visual representation of this, imagine that you had a friend, a mentor, who was always kind, always loving, always peaceful, always supportive, always understanding, always helpful. Visualize a mentor like that. And now this mentor represents the peace of your being. Now imagine that you go into a meeting, you're in a corporate meeting, it's chaotic, it's full intensity, there's conflict and everything. Now imagine this mentor is, nobody else can see them, but you know they're just behind you. They're just standing quietly behind you. And you feel their presence right behind you. You know what it's like to feel someone standing behind you. You feel viscerally the presence of this. But and this, you draw strength. You channel their imperturbability, their strength, their dignity, their clarity. It's as if they are almost working through you. You can feel that?
Yeah, I love it.
That's
yeah.
It. So this mentor behind, that's like this ocean of peace behind you. It's your being. You just feel it's this steady friend behind you all the time, supporting you, always the same, always present, no reaction, always supportive. You'll build it up. But by doing what we're doing this week, taking moments out in your life, just going back to being, resting there, tasting that your being is at peace, imperturbable, you'll build up this reservoir.
Hi, my name is Scott.
Hello, Scott.
This is my first retreat. I have two questions. One is about a meditation experience. And if time, about veiling and belief.
Okay, unless they're related, just ask one at a time.
All right. In meditation, I like what you said about attention being focused awareness. And in meditation, what I'm doing is turning my attention back, and it becomes aware of the awareness. So it's a little confusing, because in a way, awareness becomes an object of perception at that point. So it's a little confusing because...
Okay.
And then, can I go on? And then if I go a little further, I can drop the attention, and then it's just pure subjectivity, which I call isness. And it's, there's no object, there's just that subjectivity. But I think my attention gets a little nervous there because it's looking for something to become aware of.
Okay, all right. the second experience you describe, just isness, is being aware of being aware. The phrase being aware of being aware is, or the phrase I use more often now, the awareness of being. Because of the way it's spoken, it suggests that in the first phrase, being aware of being aware, that there's one being aware that is the subject, and there's another being aware that is the object. As you say, it seems to be, or when I speak of the awareness of being, awareness is the subject and being seems to be the object. as opposed to the second experience you describe, which is just pure isness, pure identity, no subject-object relationship. But actually, being aware of being aware, or the awareness of being, is the same experience as just being, which is why I actually use the phrase simply be or simply being these days more than even the phrase the awareness of being. The awareness of being or being aware of being aware, it's just a manner of speaking. I might say something like, instead of being aware of your thoughts, be aware of being. So I say, be aware of being in contrast to being aware of your thoughts. Now, being aware of your thoughts does indeed take place in subject-object experience. Your thoughts are the object, awareness is the subject. So it's in reference to that experience that I say, instead of being aware of your thoughts, be aware of being, which, as you rightly say, suggests that the awareness of being takes place in subject-object relationship like the awareness of thoughts. That's not implied. So it's just a limitation of language. In being aware of being aware or the awareness of being, what I mean is, it's like saying to the sun, first of all, illuminate the moon, now illuminate yourself. It's a limitation of language. But what's important is that the actual experience, and the experience you describe as isness or simply being, is the awareness of being. Because think about it. You say there's just the experience of being. Well, if there's the experience of being, there you are, you're in subject, the experience of being. But when you say there's just the experience of being, you don't mean subject and object, but you language it in a subject-object relationship, the awareness of being. But you don't mean that. You just mean pure being. But it's an experience, albeit a non-objective one. So it's a linguistic thing.
In that state of isness, in when I'm in that place, I'm not aware I'm in that place, but I'm in that place. It's a very odd experience.
You're not aware of it in the sense that it's not an experience that requires you to be self-referential. You don't need to look back at yourself. If I were to ask you now, are you thinking? You refer back to the experience of thought. You have to turn your attention away from me towards your thoughts. Am I thinking? Yes. You give your attention to the thoughts. But if I say to you now, are you aware of being? It's like me asking you, can you see your eyes? There's no objective experience there because your eyes cannot stand apart from themselves to know that, to see themselves. So in the awareness of being, the being that you are is aware of itself. That's why what it means. Sometimes you've heard me say that awareness is self-luminous or self-knowing. When you say, I know that I am, can you say from your experience, Scott, I know that I am? Yeah. So when you say, I know that I am, is the I that I am and the I that knows that I am, are they two different I's in you? No, when you say, I know that I am, it is you that knows yourself. It is your being that knows your being. But that doesn't take place in subject-object relationship, although you language it in duality. I know that I am.
There's a certain kind of obviousness then. That's what I'm getting.
To the knowledge of being.
Yes.
Exactly.
It's just obvious.
It's the most... it's the most obvious experience there is, and it's precisely because it's so obvious that it's so commonly overlooked. Remember Balayani from yesterday, his being is veiled by his oneness. It's his oneness. It's because being is one, and therefore cannot be divided into subject-object, that it's because it's everything that it cannot be experienced as something. The experience of being is the most obvious and ironically the most overlooked experience there is, if we can call it an experience. And you are actually experiencing being all the time. And not just those of us this very refined group that is deeply interested in these matters, but everybody and all the animals, they're all aware of being all the time, throughout the waking state, throughout the dream state, throughout the deep sleep state. It's not possible not to be aware of being, for the same reason that it's not possible for the sun not to illuminate itself. It's just that our awareness of being is most of the time so thoroughly mixed up with the awareness of our experience, with the content of experience, that it's coloured by it. And therefore we seem to be aware only of objective experience as opposed to being. It's like when you get lost in the movie, you seem to cease seeing the screen, but whenever you're watching a movie, you are always seeing the screen. Whenever you are having experience, you are always knowing your own being, and even when you're not having experience, you are knowing your own being. But if you get lost in the movie, you seem to cease seeing the screen. If you get lost in experience, you seem to cease being aware of being. And then you go on a great search that takes you all around the world looking for your being, and you think it's the most, and you hear about this thing called enlightenment, and you think, gosh, the awareness of being is the most exotic, extraordinary, and only a few people have privileged access to it. And all that's being spoken about is your being, that the intimate, obvious, ordinary, familiar experience of being, just to see that clearly.
My question is, how can I bridge the gap between the understanding that my being is shared with everyone and everything, and the felt sense of separation that I experience in the finite mind?
The felt sense of separation is completely natural. The subject-object relationship is the only way it's possible to have experience. But the downside of that, the upside is that it enables, the subject-object relationship enables us to have experience, to know a thought, to experience emotion, to see the world, to have a relationship, and so on. But the downside of it is that all experience takes place in relationship, in subject-object, whether it's a relationship with a person or knowing a thought or feeling an emotion. So that the downside is that there is always this appearance of separation. And when you understand that you share your being, the appearance of separation doesn't disappear. If the Buddha was sitting next to you, he would see the world in exactly the same way that you see. Lots of apparently separate people sitting in the room. So you have to override the apparent evidence of sense perception with your understanding. You don't suddenly expect the way you perceive the world to miraculously change. You carry on seeing the world in subject-object relationship, seeing others in subject-object relationship. It's the only way it's possible to have experience. So, but you have to. And most people base their thoughts and their feelings on the way things seem to be, the way they appear. In other words, subject-object relationship, that is separation. So what we have to do is override that appearance with our understanding. Don't expect it just to sort of magically happen because you understand, because you understand and feel deeply that you share your being with everyone. Don't expect that to just magically change the way people appear to you. You have to feel, when you're talking to someone from whom you feel separate, and it's natural to feel separate, you have to feel through, you have to make a conscious effort to feel through that sense of separation to the being that you both share. So, for instance, the best time to practice that is either with people that you like, because it's easy to feel that you share your being with people that you like, or at least people that you feel neutral towards. So this is an excellent circumstance, because you're surrounded by lovely people. It's so easy to feel you share your being with everyone here. So this would be the time, like now, in the conversation you're having. It seems that I'm separate from you, my mind, my body, my thoughts, my history. Everything about me is separate from you, apart from our being. So this would be a perfect time to not give all of your attention to what I'm saying or to what you're thinking. Reserve some of your attention for this felt sense of shared being, so that now, as you're listening to me or as you're speaking to me, you feel, you actively feel, don't wait for it to happen, actively feel that we share our being, and allow that to inform the way we relate to each other. Well, that's not difficult, because we like each other, and therefore we relate to each other in a way that is consistent with the fact that we share our being. But then, as this becomes more your natural state, you find you practice it with people that you don't particularly like, or that people that you disagree with, or people at least whose thoughts and actions you disagree with or find offensive, or people that are difficult, people that are critical of you, or people that are unkind towards you, or people that say untrue things about, and so on, then that's a very good time. And you should always be thankful for those people in your life, because it's relatively easy to feel you share your being with the people you love and the people you like, but it's the people you don't like so much. Be grateful for those people in your life as well, because they really help you to establish this understanding, this unconditional love. You love everyone. That is, you feel you share your being with everyone, not just your friends, but your enemies. Not your enemies, but the people you find difficult. You have to actively feel that. Practice feeling that.
Okay, so the visual is not so much a problem for me, because I can see the world as one, but it's the feeling that I feel that I'm here and you are there. Like, I feel here, sensation is here, and I'm located right here, okay. And everyone else is over there.
Yeah. You live in New Jersey, yeah?
On Long Island.
Long Island, yeah. So where is the space in your bedroom now?
It's in Long Island.
It's over there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where is the space in your bedroom here?
It's here.
It's over here.
Yeah.
How many miles distance is there between them, roughly?
60.
60 miles. Are they the same space, or are they two different spaces?
Same space.
Same space. Does it make any difference, the fact that one bedroom is over there and one bedroom is over here?
I get it.
It's the same.
Yeah. thank you.
Hi, Rupert. I'm particularly curious about different types of mind that are not able to be perceived from the human mind. Do you think that anything can be a type of mind? And if so, do you think everything is a type of mind?
I do think everything is mind rather than matter. I think the Caribbean beach that you dream of at night only looks as if it's made out of matter, because you view it through the perceiving faculties of the character you seem to be in your dream. You wake up in the morning and you realize, no, the Caribbean beach was made out of mind. It's not made out of matter. I would suggest the only reason the world looks as that it's made out of matter is because we perceive it through our perceiving faculties. It's really the imagination of infinite consciousness, a thought in God's mind. So I think everything is mind.
So in that scenario, would the Caribbean beach could that be a type of mind, like the sand, for example?
I see. When I say it's mind, what I mean is it's made out of consciousness. That doesn't mean that it's conscious. Something can be made out of the rocks that you see in the Caribbean. When you have a dream at night, you dream the Caribbean beach within your own mind. You localize yourself as the apparently separate subject of experience on the beach. You are the only conscious entity on the beach, the rocks. So you are having first-person experience in the dream. The dreamed character is having their own first-personal point of view. The rocks are not having experience. The sea is not perceiving. They're still made out of mind, but that doesn't mean that they are a perceiving mind. So something can be made out of consciousness. Your thoughts, for instance, forget the dream analogy, your thoughts are obviously made out of consciousness, yes? They appear in consciousness. The only substance present in consciousness out of which your thoughts can be made is consciousness itself. Therefore, your thoughts are obviously made out of consciousness. Are you with me? But your thoughts themselves are not conscious. Your current thought is not listening to our conversation. The sensation at the soles of your feet is appearing in consciousness. It's made of consciousness. But it's not listening to our conversation. So it's not it's made of consciousness, but it's not conscious. So then you might say, well, what is it that distinguishes an entity that is conscious, a perceiving subject, that's all of us, from everything else, the inanimate universe that is made of consciousness but not conscious? I would suggest that whatever it is that the consciousness localizes itself as becomes a conscious entity, a conscious being. How does consciousness localize itself? By rising in the form of perception. It is perception that throws a boundary around a little segment of consciousness and becomes a finite mind. Think about it. If you could not see, hear, touch, taste or smell, would you have any experience now of being limited or located? Please just say no.
No.
No. It is your perceiving faculties that create the illusion of being located. So how does consciousness locate itself as an apparently separate subject of experience? By rising in the form of perception. And in doing so, it throws a boundary around itself. The inside of that boundary is a finite mind. So consciousness creates the illusion of a finite mind by throwing a boundary around a segment of itself created out of made out of perception. And then you have the sense of being a perceiver on the inside and the perceived on the outside. The outside is still made of consciousness, but it has no perceiving faculties.
That makes sense.
If you become accustomed to frequently, for want of a better word, want of a better phrase, resting in your being, if you visit your being regularly, you build up a kind of reservoir of peace in yourself. You build up some credit. And then when you find yourself in a highly stressed circumstance, you may not have a moment in that circumstance to go back to your being. It's just a 1 hour full-on intensity. You have to give your attention exclusively to the situation, and it's difficult, it's conflictual, it's intense. You don't have time to pause and take even 2 minutes out. That's when you draw on your credit. You draw on your reservoir. You find you just feel it's there in the background. It's like you begin as this reservoir of peace builds up in you. You just feel it like a kind of ocean of peace behind you. And just to give you a visual representation of this, imagine that you had a friend, a mentor, who was always kind, always loving, always peaceful, always supportive, always understanding, always helpful. Visualize a mentor like that. And now this mentor represents the peace of your being. Now imagine that you go into a meeting, you're in a corporate meeting, it's chaotic, it's full intensity, there's conflict and everything. Now imagine this mentor is, nobody else can see them, but you know they're just behind you. They're just standing quietly behind you, and you feel their presence right behind you. You know what it's like to feel someone standing behind you. You feel viscerally the presence of this, but and this you draw strength. You channel their imperturbability, their strength, their dignity, their clarity. It's as if they are almost working through you. You can feel that?
Yeah, I love it.
That's it. So this mentor behind, that's like this ocean of peace behind you. It's your being. You just feel it's this steady friend behind you all the time, supporting you, always the same, always present, no reaction. Always supportive. You'll build it up, but by doing what we're doing this week, taking moments out in your life, just going back to being, resting there, tasting that your being is at peace, imperturbable, you'll build up this reservoir.